And welcome back to the Film Reel cast. It's Stuart, your host. It's another week, another film, another time for maturity and foul language. You have been warned. So, but as usual, I'm not doing this alone. I am joined by my co-hosts. And the first one always moaned, you'll know who it is, about not coming first. And I made a promise, we always come first on the podcast. That's what we want. So, it's Countdown Kelly.
I haven't, unfortunately, which is a bit disappointing, but thank you. How are you?
Not bad, but you moaned about not coming first, didn't you? This was a massive deal for you.
I wouldn't say it was a massive deal, but yes, it is nice to come first occasionally.
I just wanted you to say that and it worked. But I think if you go back to our previous podcast, you did say that why is it always Steve who comes first and you don't? And I did say to you, okay, I'm going to use the powers that be and make you come first.
Wow. You have failed then miserably, apart from introducing me first on the podcast. Nothing else.
No problem. Well,
it doesn't happen.
Okay, I get that. Okay. Fucking tough audience tonight.
Isn't it?
Definitely. Blimey. But someone else who isn't a tough audience, he just needs no introduction. All he needs is, it's Neil.
So big.
Hello.
Oh my God, that's just so good. The bass in your voice, I can feel it.
Oh, the bass in my voice. I can go deeper if you like.
It's amazing. Yeah. You know, it's been a really good month for our podcast. So thanks to everyone. We've had so many people stream download that it's actually broken the servers and I can't upload any more podcasts at the moment because it's full up. So that's just amazing.
Blimey, that's really good. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. You must enjoy our nonsense.
Yeah. So wherever you're listening to this from, going to work in the morning, playing with yourself, playing with someone else, doing whatever you're doing, we really, really do appreciate it. So it's great. And so much so, we've come up with a fantastic film. Or is it? I don't know. I think we could be divided, but it's on Netflix in the UK, 2014, The Guest. Directed by Adam Wingard. So, and this film I saw a long, long, long time ago, and I really enjoyed it. And when we were like, okay, we just need a quick film to do, Bosch and The Guest was it. So, as I say, it's on Netflix in the UK. The cast is relatively unknown, but I was so pleased. Do you know why?
Why? Tell us, Stu.
Because we've got Lance Reddick, and again, we've got that John Wick link.
He was the one you sent to kill the fucking boogeyman.
Yeah, I did notice he was in it.
Yeah. How good is that? I smiled and thought, I've got to mention this.
Well, yeah, you got to, you know, he was in one good John Wick film.
He was in all of them until he died, spoiler.
Yeah, but there was only one good one.
Well, that's debatable. I really don't know. I mean, I don't really like three of them.
I don't think Kelly likes any of them. Well, she might like the first one a bit, but I think you're the only one that likes them all, Stu, out of all of us on the pod.
That's true. And I do argue that every week. And I've just been editing the Jaws 2 podcast. And funnily enough, I left it to do this. And we were just talking about John Wick. So it's quite ironic that we are again. But the Guest had a $5 million budget, and it says gross worldwide 2,700,000. I never remember this being at the cinema in 2014, and I've been actively going on the Limitless card for a long, long time. Have you guys heard of this before?
Never. I don't know if it was only in a release in America. I don't know because it says it was released in September 2014 in the United States, but because it was released in January on Sundance, so I guess that was some sort of platform, or I don't know what that is. So
you got the Sundance Festival, haven't you?
Yeah, so that may well, whether that is that then, I guess. But yeah. I don't know if it was released anywhere other than the United States.
No,
well, it's only grossed $2.7 million.
No, but the interesting thing is the star of this, Dan Stevens, who plays David, is in Bridgerton. I've never seen that. From his role in that to this, I'm aware he didn't play a complete psychopath in that. But the cast is relatively small. It's got Laura Peterson, who plays the mother. It's got, is it how is it Mika Monroe who plays Anna Peterson, the daughter? And you've got Luke Peterson played by Brendan Mayer, and Leland Orser who plays Spencer Peterson, who this isn't the first time he's been on the pod. He was one of like Liam Neeson's goons when we did the Taken films, and I couldn't work out, I know his face, but didn't know where he was from.
Yeah, he's one of his mates, isn't he? One of his old army mates. He's quite he's quite a good actor, though, isn't he, Leland Orser? He's been in quite a few things.
Yeah. So. Did you feel he was underused in this?
Yeah, his character was quite frustrating in this film. But yeah, for his acting prowess, yes, he probably was underutilised.
That's what I thought. I thought he's going to come into it at some point, like recognise what's going on and kind of be a part. But he just was like a dickhead dad, wasn't he?
Basically, yeah. He was just a drunk that wanted to have a better job, but wasn't good enough.
He was. So. This film has got a terrific kill count. I went through it. And in total, I don't know who works this out, but there's meant to be 44 deaths in this. And they're including everyone in the diner and people in the hospital, like soldiers who, when he killed them, when he kind of takes over the identity. But I'm spoiling it. The story of this is deadly simple. A soldier introduces himself to the Peterson family, claiming to be a friend of their son's who died in action. After the man is welcomed into the house, a series of deaths, oh, incidentally, happen in the town and people start getting brutally murdered. Is it connected to the presence of David? Oof. Obviously it is.
That's for us to figure out.
It is. I've got a feeling we're going to figure it out pretty fucking soon, to be honest, because it is extremely obvious. But I do like the cast in this. I think it's really well acted. And when I first saw this, that Sheila Kelly, who plays Laura Peterson, she really has got the Elizabeth Shue look about her, hasn't she? Quite attractive, plays it down, looks quite ordinary.
Who? Sheila?
No, Laura... Elizabeth Shue from the Karate Kid films.
Yeah, yeah. Which actress, sorry? Mika Monroe? Or
Who plays Laura Peterson.
Okay, that's interesting.
Really thought she did.
No, I found her very annoying and very bad at acting.
Oh, okay. And Kelly, did you watch Bridgerton when it was on?
No, never.
Okay, I was thinking you may have actually watched it. And I take it, Neil, you don't watch period dramas, do you?
No, I'm not into that type of thing.
No, exactly the same here. I've never seen it. I haven't seen Bridgerton or Downton Abbey or any other stuff like that. I know they're really popular, but I hate period dramas. I really,
other porn I like, just not that.
Oh yeah, I'm well up for anything else, but just this. But it's very, very good. The film starts with the mum, with Laura Peterson, just looking at a picture of her son, who's obviously killed in action in the war. We don't know if it's Afghanistan. I believe it is. So Laura's just looking thoroughly dejected and beaten in the lounge. Then the front door goes, and it's David, blue-eyed, really good-looking, really clean-cut. But he's got that, we did Limitless the other week, he's got that blue-eyed Bradley Cooper look, which is quite menacing. And we're always going to ask you, Kels, because we do, is this guy the one? Is he the good-looking guy who finally can be recognised?
He isn't ugly, but his eyes are freaky, which makes him kind of freaky looking. His eyes are just piercing, and when he does his stare, it's quite off-putting.
It is, and it should be.
It's quite uncomfortable.
Oh, uncomfortable. I wonder what you meant by off-putting.
Because when Adam Wingard was doing this, he said to Dan Stevens, when you're acting normal, when you're showing empathy and you're a normal person, blink. As soon as you're not, I don't want you to blink. I want you to hold that 100-yard stare. And when you watch this, every time he looks at someone with actual menace, that he doesn't blink, because it kills any emotion that he's got. And it works. And when there's a bit where he looks out the window when they show Anna in the bedroom next door, isn't there? And he's just fucking staring out the window. It looks like a psycho. He doesn't blink. And when I watched it tonight, I tried to hold the blink for as long as he did. And my eyes were like watering. Oh, so much pain. I don't know how he did it, honestly.
Professional actors for you, mate.
I know. It's just amazing. I could not do it. He comes across really, really nice, really charming, calling everyone ma'am, and that he ran there. He's very humble from the bus station. And it's interesting because obviously I've never kind of been in the military. I don't know anyone who's been there at all. The weakness of this woman missing her son and this absolute stranger turning up saying, I know your son. I was in the army with him. We went to Afghanistan. We toured together. And he's got a message for you.
Mrs. Peterson?
Yes? Can I help you?
My name is David. Mrs. Peterson, I knew your son, Caleb. And we trained together and served together and we came to be good friends. One of the things he asked was for me to check on y'all. You and your whole family here. He wanted me to tell you that he loved you. He specifically wanted me to tell each one of you that he loved you and he was thinking of you guys up until the end. I said I'd do that, and so here I am.
I kind of wonder, would a family let a complete stranger in, or is this far-fetched? I really don't know the answer to that.
Yes, I suppose it is far-fetched, but because he's obviously in the picture with him, isn't he, on their mantelpiece, that obviously it gives it a bit more credibility, but still you don't really know anything about this guy. And I have to agree with the dad when he starts saying, you know, you don't know if he's got PTSD and all this type of stuff, but the mum's sort of so set on having him in the house, but it's probably because she misses her son so much, so she's sort of trying to cling on to anything she can.
Yeah, and it's the desperation because he says he fought with Caleb.
Mm.
And in the picture, and you notice this, Kel, that he looks like he's, I don't know if he's got ginger hair, doesn't he? I don't quite know if he has.
In the picture, he definitely looks like a full-on ginge, and he isn't that in reality. So for me, I would be questioning that. Even if I really desperately wanted to hang on to like a memory of my son, I would still be questioning. You don't look quite the same. You can get it if he's like a bit pasty and he's a bit brown or something like that, having suntan or something, but to go from ginger to mousy browny hair, no.
What if he was dark haired and now he's blonde? I mean, is it just gingers that you don't trust or?
No, it's not just gingers. It's not limited to them. But no, I just don't think that's something that I would be, that's an odd thing to change when you've just come out of the army. It's not like you've had time to get home and dye your hair. So he's claiming he's literally just left and run there from the bus stop. So he's not been able to come home and spruce himself up. He's just as he was supposedly in the army. So where's your ginger hair gone?
But would they let gingers in Afghanistan? It's fucking hot and you're fair skinned. Is that going to be of use or not?
I reckon it would be a massive liability.
I reckon it would be. Because
I'm shit in
fucking
the sun.
Yeah, so am I. And I'm not ginger.
Yeah, but I'm fair-skinned and I don't burn.
Yeah, but I'd have fucking sun cream on my fingers. I'd be trying to throw a grenade. I'd drop it on the floor. I wouldn't be able to reload.
That's it.
You'd have your factor 50 and that would be it. I'd be fucking useless. They'd look like whoever it was, the enemy, would look in their binoculars and they'd just wonder why there's a crab in an army uniform. I'd be fucking bright red. It'd just be awful.
Yeah. Well, at the start, though, when you're really bright white, you might blind them.
I would do a pasty snowman or lobster
that's
man.
That's it. So.
And we're soon introduced to Anna, who plays the daughter and the sister of Luke. And it's very interesting that they introduce her wearing knickers laying on the bed. In a very sassy pose. They really do sexualize her, but it doesn't really come into play later on in the film, which kind of threw me because I thought it would. Did you guys?
Yeah, I did with that introduction of a sexy panty pose on the bed, but no, just a few short dresses and that was it.
Yeah, it did surprise me. Kel, did you kind of expect her to be like exploited later on?
Yeah, I didn't really understand why there was the need for her to be introduced like that at all, because she wasn't that per sort of person in any way, shape, or form. So I found it a very strange decision.
Hey, there you are. Anna, this is David.
Very nice to meet you. Caleb told me a lot about you.
David just got discharged this week. He was a friend of your brother's.
You know Caleb?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. So, where are you staying?
Well, I noticed a motel off the highway on the way here.
No, 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 no. You will stay with us while you're here.
Oh, no, I couldn't
it,
put y'all out.
Nonsense. We would love to have you with plenty of room. And in fact, you can stay in Caleb's old room.
Yeah, and I found it a strange decision that they let him stay at someone who don't know, let him stay in Caleb's room, their dead son's room. That was a strange decision as well.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, but I think again, it was that desperation, wasn't it, from Laura that just wanted that connection. But it's just very odd.
It is. And when he sits on the bed, he does that stare, and that's when you know something's wrong. And you notice he doesn't blink. And it's like the psycho in him. But you kind of wonder, as the guy says, maybe he has the PTSD. I love it the way he says it like that. Like he's got fucking AIDS or something.
The
It's so
PTSD.
funny. But you kind of do wonder, has he got PTSD? Is he gonna fucking freak out and that's the issue? But I mean, it soon comes into play. And I love the introduction of Luke, Brendan Meyer, because I think he's a tropey character. He's the bullied little boy. And the bullies are fucking idiots, aren't they? When he gets pushed against the locker and you've got that jock in the green like hood who walks up to him and just kind of like does his face, pushes his face against him.
Oh,
It's
no.
just, oh my God, it's a shit thing to do. But it's a good way of showing that he's vulnerable. He can be exploited. He's fully groomed later on. And the jocks are just tropes themselves. But it's, for me, it's done okay, isn't it? And it's been done before, but it's all right.
It's bad. It's badly acted.
I would say that's very badly acted.
Yeah, it was awful.
I think it got the point across, but not too overly acted. It wasn't really, the acting was shit, but the job was done, and that's all I needed to do. But the kid just doesn't have any charisma. But I suppose he's being bullied, and I mean, David notices it straight away when he says about his black eye, and he says the ball got hit in his face.
It looked like he got hit or something.
Yeah, I got hit with a football in gym class.
Yeah, that can happen.
Yeah.
And it's quite good, and you can see him instantly, like most predators do, hooking on to Luke as a victim. And the family are just fucking ignorant. The family are grieving, but they've just got no idea what's going on with their kids, have they?
Oh no, none whatsoever. Because she goes, "Oh, how's your day?" She go, he's like, "Oh, yeah, it's all right." And she goes, "Oh, good. That's good," sort of thing. Not really looking at the fact that he's got into that car, pulling his hood over his face so he can't be seen, and all this other stuff. So they're completely unaware.
Yeah, and the bully would have been going on for ages, surely, wouldn't it, Kaz?
Oh yeah.
It wouldn't have got to that stage instantly, would it? But they're just wrapped up in their own, or grief, I suppose, to notice anything else that's going on around them. You don't always pay attention to what's right under your nose, do you? Because you're just too preoccupied.
You are indeed. And I don't know if it's just me. Neil, were you on our Face Off podcast? Kelly, I don't know if you were.
I wasn't.
No, I wasn't, no.
But there's a scene in Face Off where John Travolta's daughter is in the car and she's with her boyfriend and he's trying it on with her a bit too heavy. And this was by the time where Nicolas Cage is playing John Travolta. And he comes outside and breaks the window and drags this like the boyfriend out of the car because he's being way too heavy and beats the fuck out of him. And it's
Seems
totally,
reasonable.
yeah, exactly. And I honestly thought that when we're introduced to Zeke, who's the scummy, druggy boyfriend of Anna, that something like this would happen, that he would overstep the mark. And then to make a kind of impression that David would then beat the actual fuck out of him. I just thought that they would steal that scene. I don't know if you guys thought that.
I thought that with her and him because of the way she was introduced. So I thought that's how it would go. I was surprised when it didn't.
What, as in David would what attack?
Go for Zeke more than he. I know he will get to what he does, but he doesn't do it in the way I thought he would do.
No, completely. And I thought it was a really strange scene, and it really makes the dad look bad. When Spencer's sitting down, talking about work, moaning about his own life with David. And I think it really shows a reflection of his marriage, of just how shit it is. And there's no communication with Laura. And that he feels so lonely that he's got no one to talk to. Because even David, who's a fucking psycho, looks bored out of his tits, doesn't he?
Well, anyone would be bored by this guy, wouldn't they? He's such a... Like, he plays him really well. Like we said earlier, that he's a really good actor. But his character that he plays is so dry.
Mm.
It's... Yeah, I'd be bored out of my mind. I'd have to have several beers like he's had, to be fair, just to numb the pain.
And do you think he's being more kind of overly accommodating towards David because of Laura's sake? Because he's only known him, he's only been there half a day or a day. And he says, I'll be here, I'll have dinner, I'll get my head down, and then I'll leave and I'll get the bus in the morning. And then he starts trying to sort him out a job, and no, you can't leave and you must stay here. Is that because he wants his company, or is this for his missus? I got the feeling he was so lonely, he just wanted to latch on to David.
Do you know what? I don't know. I can't give you an answer why they've just allowed this man to stay in their house and is encouraging him staying as long as possible. Because, they don't know fuck all about him.
Mm.
But yet, everyone just seems to be, yeah, come stay, it's fine, apart from the daughter. And it's never really explained. It's just sort of, you're trying to guess and put it together yourself, but it doesn't really make any sense to me anyway.
No, I wondered that. And especially Kells the next day, when they allow this fucking stranger to go to school and pick their son Luke up, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a whole load of questions around that. Why is he driving their car? They don't know him, so how can they trust him with their son? There's a whole lot of problems with that. I don't like it. And that's not normal, even for people who are grieving.
No, I completely agree. But it does lead us to what I personally think is one of the best scenes in this film, where he picks him up. He can see and he carries on a conversation as to the damage on your face. Who calls that? And Luke, to be fair, is very honest. He points out the group of jocks and says, he did this, he did this. He's the most, like, the antagonistic one out of them. And he follows them to a bar. And it's just brilliant, because David is a fucking nutcase. We learn that he is a special ops trained killer. So he's not sweating or worried about anyone. And it's just brilliant. He orders some really girly drinks over to, like, the table where the bullies are sitting with their girlfriends, doesn't he? And it's just brilliant, isn't it?
You know how to make a fireball?
Cinnamon schnapps and Tabasco sauce.
That's my drink of choice. Let me get one of those. Coke here for my brother. And I can't help but notice that those ladies over there are drinking cheap beer. That seems like a shame to me. I'd like to buy each one of them a blowjob shot.
Are you serious?
I am. Yes.
Do you want to buy anything for their fellas?
Do I look like I'd like to buy something for their fellas?
Might be the polite thing to do.
Sure, okay, fine. Let me get each one of those guys a cosmopolitan.
It's been done before many, many times.
Did you not enjoy this?
Not really.
I really enjoyed this, Kel.
I did. I liked the way he went in on them. I thought it was very good.
Just reminded me of something like Roadhouse. It's just like, this has been done in the 70s and probably before that. It's just, you could see it coming a mile off, and he still lets Luke get punched in the face.
He does, which was really disappointing. That did kind of surprise me that he wasn't actually protecting him. But I think I just wanted to see, we've seen this, like, the 1,000-yard stare and the psychotic look. I just wanted to let him unload and see what he was capable of and how far he'd go. And I think that's why I really enjoyed this scene so much.
That's fair enough. I can understand that completely. And yeah, I mean, the action in itself, I can't complain about it. It's entertaining. It's just disappointing that it's the same old trope that's been done a million times before. But I think the best bit out of this scene for me is the fact that how clever he is about, because obviously the barman, the guy that owns the bar, has got that massive baseball bat or whatever, and he's going to threaten him, and he sort of completely wipes him out with just words saying, you know, you're just going to let this slide. Here's a bit of money because you're serving to miners and all that type of stuff. And I thought that was the more clever part of it. The way he's able to communicate. Yeah.
He keeps his cool all the time, doesn't he? He doesn't even, he's so, I don't know if he's kind of so psychopathic that he feels he doesn't need to like lose his temper, or he's just probably so controlled that he knows he can just, everyone's so fearful of him that he can just, as you say, talk to the guy, and the guy's just seen him beat the fuck out of four people or three people, like, easy, without breaking a sweat, and he just says, yeah, okay, fair enough, I'll leave this alone and call the police and just make up some bullshit story. I love this. I like the violence. I wanted more of this. And I know you love a bit of fucking good old-fashioned violence, girl.
I do. I did enjoy this. I thought they deserved everything they got, to be fair, and I thought he did it well. And I liked how cool and psycho he comes across doing it. I did enjoy it.
It was great. Love a bar fight. And another scene, which I'm sure you must have liked, is when he steps out of the bathroom, a steamy bathroom, just wearing a towel. Talk to me, Kel.
Yeah, he has a very nice body. You have to look at his face, and his eyes are just like, there's nothing behind his eyes. He's got that creepy stare, so you could never get close to him. But from a distance, he looks good to look at.
He does indeed. And this is the first time he kind of melts Anna and she lets her guard down a bit. Obviously, it's his body. And I really wasn't too sure which way this was going to go. And this was kind of the only thing in the film that did have me guessing when I first watched it, because she does look at him and then she kind of leans against the wall like they've had it done in loads of films, that he's such a heartthrob and I kind of don't know where this is going. He's just so fit. And I honestly thought that if he wanted to nail her there and then, that he could have done it. But she kind of goes frosty again, doesn't she, Neil? Straight away.
She sort of, well, she's that typical stroppy teenager, isn't she? Or late, early 20s and stuff like that. She's sort of got that demeanour about her. She's clearly going through a lot. So she doesn't trust him yet, does she? She thinks he's fit, but she doesn't trust him yet.
No, and they go to like a house party where there's Zeke there and we're introduced to Craig. And it's kind of, they're all, I don't know, they all look about fucking 17 and he's come across as an adult. It doesn't really fit in, but he kind of agrees to smoke drugs and stuff like that. And you knew at some point that there was going to be a fight, that all of these strangers would see how cool he is, because it's been done fucking loads of times. And it's when he's there and Kristen's there and the boyfriend comes in and starts saying, I want to talk to you, you're having a party, and I wasn't invited. And it was so fucking obvious that he was going to be dispatched really easy, violently, by David in front of everyone, wasn't it, Neil?
Yeah, and I have to say, I did enjoy that, because people like that deserve it. Coming in the house and thinking he can just like do what he wants and get her to go where he wants and all this. So I did enjoy the fact he got his head smashed off a wall, because it's something I'd like to do.
Yeah. I thought it was great. He doesn't fucking blink. Again, Kels, it's the level of violence he gives out without... I'd love to know his kind of heart rate, because I should imagine he just does not adjust at all.
He doesn't seem to have any react... He knows what he wants to do, but he just has no emotional reaction to it whatsoever. It's just like he's got tight shoelaces, so he does it. There's no... He doesn't change the way he is. He only changes when his identity and everything is questioned.
But I think, as we obviously we find out later on, because I've had to watch this a couple of times to try and figure it out, because, oh man, I struggled. But it's his program, isn't it? He's part of an experiment, which we get onto later. So I think that's what all of this is the sense that he just has to run at this particular way constantly. And then he, like, when he, because obviously he then bangs that bloke's ex-girlfriend, and he's showing no emotion until she sort of says, "You don't seem into this." And he almost like a switch.
Yeah.
And then he's, "Oh yeah, no, I am into it," sort of thing. Yeah. It's almost like a programming that he has to adjust to his surroundings.
Yeah, he doesn't, as you say, he's just laying there almost kind of like super soldier fucking serum, that he doesn't talk really. And it was funny though that Kirsten, like, she was into him a little bit, liked him, he was good looking. As soon as she witnessed him have a fucking certain degree of violence, "Do you want to go and see the house? I'll shag you." I mean, if it's that easy, I'm just going to walk into a pub and just smash someone's head against a fucking glass, turn around and just see, anybody you want to bunk up?
See how many knickers have fallen to the floor, yeah.
Whilst I'm being carted off.
I wouldn't hold your hopes out.
I knew you'd fucking get in there like that. Yeah. I honestly knew you would.
I'm just trying to set expectations. I don't want you to be really disappointed.
Well, it's not going to happen straight away. You have to find the right sort of pub.
Exactly.
Well, depending on the type of pub you go to, you may well find someone, yes.
Exactly.
You may well. It's just whether you want that.
You just have to go through it. It's the circle of life. You have to do it.
You'll be sucking them all off anyway, so there probably won't be anyone to fucking throw against the wall, so.
How dare you? I certainly won't be. That's outrageous.
You'll be in the toilets comparing dick sizes to the fucking last story you told.
Oh, no, I'm not getting into a fight over that again.
Over that? Has it not got a name?
No, I've never named it, no. Anyone wants to give it a name, write in.
What names would you accept and wouldn't you?
I don't know, give me a list and I'll pick one out.
Wow, that is... I really hope people do listen.
Wow, that is, Kelly's there early.
Wow, yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah, there you go, it's called Wow. Well done, girls.
Yeah, but Wow is positive and negative.
Oh, my Lord, see?
Yeah, she always giveth with one hand and taketh away with the other, doesn't she?
It can be a Wow, that's amazing. It can be a Wow, is that it?
Excellent. I do like the bit in this film, and I'm going to fucking get back into the film, where they're sitting at the table and Craig is just a fucking scumbag. He's a massive dickhead. And when he says, "We support you guys," you support us how?
"I wanted to say, we support you guys. If you need anything, you just let me know."
"Support us how?
You know, we support you. Like, call America, right?"
"But you wouldn't support us, my life. Enlisting."
"Oh, shit, man. They don't want me in there. No, I can't. You know, I got bad asthma. They make it real hard to..."
"Hard to what?"
"Hey, man. I just... What?"
"I'm just fucking with you, man."
And that look he gives him, it's fucking cold. No words are needed. And Craig shrinks, doesn't he? He shits himself.
Yeah, of course he does. He's trying to be cool and sort of connect with this guy. And he basically just fucking scares the shit out of him. Be like, "Oh, fuck. I'm just a druggy dropout. I'm not even going to fight an army guy.
I can't wait to scare the shit out of me. It really, really would. He's just fucking naughty." And then he asks for a gun, which we knew he would ask for a weapon, which is a bit weird because you kind of think, if he's in the army, I'm surprised he didn't have a gun on him. When he got discharged from the army, surely he would have one, I would have thought. He's got a knife, hasn't he?
I don't think they get given guns when you leave. Like, here you go, off you pop.
But he's a fucking nutcase. That's why I thought he would have taken one.
Yeah, but we don't know at this stage, do we, why he's not in the army anymore.
We do not at this case, but he sees, and this is where kind of I thought the trope was going to come into it from Face Off, where Zeke and Anna are having an argument and he's quick to pick up on this, but he's such a predator that he almost sits and watches people and the kind of, and is very capable, probably due to his army training, of pointing out or finding the weak ones and how to manipulate them, isn't he?
No, I think you're right, to be fair. He is. He's very astute with being able to sort of figure people out and get into their minds, like with her, because he instantly calls the boyfriend out as a drug dealer and all this type of stuff. And initially she's like, oh, no, no. She, and then opens up to him and she, he sort of feels like he's got his claws into her then.
Yeah, and I thought that at the party he would have attacked Zeke. I expected Zeke to come onto her at the party, or he'd find her, like go into a room when he looks for her to leave and she's being kind of sexually assaulted. But I suppose, to the film's credit, that that has been done numerous times. But then they do the trope of, on the way back, he really tries his best to groom her in the car, saying, if I had a girl like you waiting at home, I would have never have gone out, and all the usual lines. But to her credit, and I don't know why, but she's not falling for it. And I don't think it's because she's so in love with Zeke. I just don't know why she's not falling for his bullshit.
She is, though, isn't she? Because when they're outside the bedrooms and they obviously go their separate ways, there's that awkwardness where she's sort of just stood there going, oh, do I invite him in? Don't I? Sort of thing. Or is he going to make a move on me? And he walks in the room first and she's left with a very disappointed look on her face. Then instantly goes off to make this mix CD of shit music that they've been listening to in the car that he pretends he likes.
And why was she laughing when she was laying on the bed? She's got her headphones on and she just laughs. Was that just like a love laugh? Kelly, have you done a mixtape at all?
No, I can't say that's something I've ever done, actually, or would ever want to do. I think that's a little bit too much. She doesn't trust him, but she does trust him, and then she doesn't really trust him. So if you don't, no, why are you going to that? Because that's quite a personal thing to do. What, why would you do that? Yeah, because you're putting down the things that you like and that mean something to you and you're giving them to someone else. So I think that's quite a personal thing to do for someone that, one, you don't know, and two, you don't really trust. So why would you?
No, that's fair enough. I mean, I've never done one, so I think it's probably a girly thing at the risk of being like hammered for it, but it just seems to be.
Yeah, I just thought it was a little cheeky laugh because she was going to play with herself.
Yeah, it could have been. It could have been. I mean, you know more about that than I do.
Oh, it's just that sort of, oh, yeah, yeah. Seen him in a towel. He's wooed me.
That's enough.
And here comes the buzzing.
Goes in the bank.
So, yeah.
And they do pan out and she's in the room listening to a mixtape, maybe having some solo fun. I don't know. And then it pans outside and then you look at David and his stare is for 15 seconds. I timed it. He's just got that killer look. And it's just a brilliant look. It scared the fucking shit out of me. I really wanted them to go pan across and he's rubbing one out or he's doing something really fucking kinky. He's like hanging himself whilst masturbating, just something really odd.
Yeah, yeah, just tying a noose around his dick. Yeah.
David Carradine.
Is that odd? Well, for some people it is, not for everyone.
Okay.
But when Anna does wake up, she goes into the kitchen and outside David is talking and it's a massive foreshadow. It's a clue of where he's come from and what his plans are. He's talking about, I think he's talking to a plastic surgeon saying he's off the grid and trying to organise kind of changing his appearance and altering it. And that's when she realises that nothing is as it should be. And she gets on the phone to the army. And I don't know how easy it would be to actually ring up the army and do a check on someone, do you?
No, no, I don't. I can't imagine there's a army soldier hotline.
No, but you can ring someone up.
Yeah, and it, 0800, who's this soldier?
Yeah, I can tell you all this personal information because data protection isn't a thing in this film whatsoever. Yeah.
I have to say, though, for considering how fucking programmed him is, how cool, calm and collected, the fact that he's just stood outside the house shouting about the fact he wants, he's off the grid, he wants a new face and fingerprints is pretty fucking dumb.
Yes. Yeah. It's stupid. He's saying it. Yeah. everywhere. He may as well fucking just shout it out on the table. This is what I'm going to do. And it does flag up, contact KPG Corporation immediately, which we then find out that that's where Lance Reddick, Major Carver, works for. And it's so over the top fucking secret squirrel stuff that the next thing you see somebody on the phone saying, yeah, he's there. We'll take it from here. We'll go there. And Lance Reddick is in a meeting and these people are outside with fucking machine guns. Who the fuck is going to take over that meeting? It can't be that important. But I just love, he's so stiff and so strange, but he's such a cool character, Lance Reddick, isn't he? I fucking love this guy.
Sounds like you were stiff.
I was a little bit. I just think he's so cool. In The Wire, he plays like the chief in The Wire. He's fucking awesome in that. And he's just brilliant. He really, really is good. This is going to contain spoilers, everyone. So if you haven't watched this, we will spoil this even further. But I was fucking gutted that he died in this.
Were you?
Yeah, I don't know if it's just through The Wire, through John Wick, that I just really, really like this guy. I think he's such a presence, and I thought his death was really, really wank. We do see the scene where he gets his gun. David is going to test a gun out, and he meets Craig and his other idiot friend, who's a proper fucking redneck. And this made me laugh because it knew what was going to happen. You're going to meet a complete stranger who gives you the little bit of the willies because he's a fucking nutcase. And you're going to meet in the middle of nowhere and just give him loads of fucking guns.
You want the elite?
Well, I'll take them all.
What, all the handguns?
No, everything. All your guns.
Shit. That's what I was thinking. Look, man, if you brought money for all of them, I'll cut you a deal. You can take them all off my hands.
No, I'm going to kill you.
This was set up for them both to be executed, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. But I thought it was still very clever, to be fair. The fact that he checks all the guns and stuff and he's going, oh, well, if you've got the money, he goes, nah, I'm just going to kill you. And yeah. The guy in the cap just shits himself instantly. And that did make me laugh.
And it always, I don't know if it's me, probably is me, I'm about to find out. In a film, when someone takes a gun apart and they check all the components and they just put it back together, I just get a little tingly feeling. I love that. It just gives me a chub on. Kels?
No, I can't say it gave me that kind of reaction at all. No.
If it would have given you a chub on, I would have been really concerned.
No, I was about to say. That's...
I keep saying I tuck well. Oh, but who knows? Anything's possible.
That's not what we want to talk about. Honestly, I just apologise for everyone listening, especially if you're eating over lunch whilst you're listening to this at work. It's not something you want us to think about. But I just love it. And it turns them on. And as you say, I'll take the whole lot and I'm going to kill you. And he blows the hole in the middle of Craig's mate's head. And it does make me laugh because when Craig runs away, really, really helpful that he runs in a dead straight line.
Yeah,
isn't he?
Yeah. Yep. I think we all thought exactly the same thing, didn't we? It's like, just zigzag. Fucking zigzag, mate. Just don't run straight, you dick. But no.
So good.
I did like the fact that when he hit him, his hat flew off, though. I thought that was quite clever.
Yeah, it's very, very realistic, but it's just so funny. It's just in a straight line. Because you can see that David didn't even have to move his arm when he was aiming at him. It was just brilliant. And then fucking Spencer comes home, the dad, and his boss and his missus have been killed. We later learn that David has done this. And out of it, there's always a silver lining. He's got promotion, regional manager's pay, profit in that. And everyone's quite happy about it, apart from Anna, who's a little bit spooked. And she's already told her mum that David got discharged from the army and things aren't right. And you can see it, because when she rings up originally, the picture on the screen of when they're searching David Collins isn't Dan Stevens' character. So for the audience watching, you should fucking realise red flags everywhere that our man is an imposter. But he gets out of it really easy, doesn't he, when he's confronted by Anna about his dog tags.
Well, he just gets out some dog tags and says, yeah, this is me. I don't wear them because I don't know why. Was his response, which is really weird. And then he says he'll get his paperwork, but They go, oh, no, don't worry about it. Apologise to him.
Twats, aren't they? The family are fucking idiots.
Absolutely. Yeah. Abso-fucking-lutely.
Because if you've got concerns, your own daughter's welfare, and you've and she's kind of got these alarm bells going, and even the army have said, this person died fucking ages ago, that you're going to listen to your daughter, you're going to kind of worry a bit, and maybe, yeah, why don't you stay at a hotel for the next couple of nights, so even if you make excuses up so we can sort our daughter's behaviour out.
Mm.
But they, the way they kind of agree and they stick with David Cowell is, it's just nonsense. No family on earth would do this, surely.
I would really hope not, because it's just so naive. And I don't get, if and they're grieving, aren't they, because they've lost a child. So surely you would be listening to the children you still have, and you would be paying a lot more attention to make sure that they're okay. And if she's genuinely concerned like she is, and she shows it, she shows that she's worried, she shows that she doesn't feel that something's right. And if you've got a strange man living in your house that's making your daughter feel uncomfortable, why wouldn't you do something about that?
No, it is stupid. And Zeke calls her up and just wants to talk to her. Then he gets stopped by the police as he's speaking on the phone to her. And we realise later on that he's been set up, and they found the gun, which has been wiped clean, that killed Craig. So that's him helpfully out of the picture. Anna goes to the cafe and tells Kristen that she's got concerns about David, which really comes to fucking bite her on the arse. And the scene where Luke, because you continuously get this kind of bonding or a more grooming scene when they're cutting pumpkins and David gets that flick knife out. You knew. They may as well have just circled it in the film and broke the fourth wall of this will come back later on in the film where he'll use this on me.
Yeah, I know. It was so fucking obvious, wasn't it? It was ridiculous. And I'm not being funny. He says some pretty fucked up shit to this kid, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Like when he sat there and just going, yeah, well, you know, if anyone bullies you again, just fucking go down and burn the house with their families in it. What are they going to do? What do you mean, what they're going to fucking do?
Yeah.
So that's just, it just went from like normal, I say normal grooming, that sounds weird, but you know, what he's trying to do to just extreme fucking, yeah, go around murdering people. It's fine.
But do you think that, because I, when I watch this again today, that it's trying to, I don't know, you give film lots of credit, I suppose, but I kind of thought he's grooming him. Is it because is he groomed in already, or is he lonely? Is the child stupid? Is he's not frightened at all? But when he's questioned all the way through this about, later on in the film, you killed my dad's boss and his wife. I don't care about it. You killed these people. I don't care. I don't understand how quickly this kid can be groomed. And he's not stupid. It doesn't really make sense. There's no explanation. I'd rather him kind of turn his back on his family and go full tilt on this. Because it was just really, really convenient for the sake of the plot, wasn't it?
It was. It really was, but I guess even though it wasn't particularly well explained, I think what they were trying to say is the fact that he doesn't have anyone, does he, other than his family. He only has friends online, so he was kind of clinging to him, like, I know what you've done, but you've helped me out, and you're actually a decent guy, and he hasn't really got anyone else. And it was really weak, don't get me wrong, but I think that was the line they were trying to go down.
Yeah, and he does manage, obviously, with Zeke being in prison, the dad never liking the kid anyway, managed to start to put divides in the family. And I do like that, because that is what people do who are predators, and they're very, very good at their job, and they can split people up, and you start to question yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And when he goes into the bedroom about getting Zeke arrested, I really did not know how this was going to be played out, because it must have been really fucking terrifying for her, because her flags are going, and she plays it really, really well. And when he kind of looks at her and says, I'll be gone in the next few days, that you won't have to put up with me much longer, he just holds that stare, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's like he's trying to intimidate her, but it was really odd. Because he's trying to gain her trust, and then he basically threatens her.
Well, he's trying to manipulate her, isn't he? He's trying to be the nice person, and then sort of showing his nasty side, but then coating it with, but I'm a nice person, so you kind of let the nasty side go. It's a manipulation, it's a control situation. That's what he wants to try and do. He wants to control her reactions because he wants to do what he wants to do, even though she's trying to figure him out. So he wants to stop that. And he thinks if he can control her, she won't suss him out.
Yeah, potentially.
It's good she doesn't back down. And I do like the fact that she stays strong. She holds her eye contact with him. And not that he really gives a shit because he's just such a fucking nutcase. And the next scene when Luke and Anna are in the car, they kind of say the whole plot. It's a really important scene in the fact that they tell the audience of what's actually happened and where they are. They kind of summarise, he's a nutcase, plastic surgeon, look into it for me, and he's a killer. And that's literally what the next scene is, like the last scene we're getting into. And I like it when you got the one of the kids who had his fucking chin smashed in. And if you're going to go around like trying to be cool, if you've got this massive plaster on your chin, it's never going to work, is it? You're going to look a real tit. And this kid does, doesn't he?
He looks a tit anyway, doesn't he? Fucking calling him a faggot and then and all this tough stuff. He just the complete opposite of badass and cool.
Hey, what you looking at? Oh, are you looking for someone to do your sex change operation?
Oh, what a wanker.
And I like the fact that Luke does retaliate, but I wanted him to go, like, fucking crazy. Everything that David had taught him, I wanted Luke to just really come out of his shell. I know he breaks a yardstick over him, which he wouldn't have done before, but just, like, straddle him, punch him again and again and again. Just like Robin did when we did the black phone last week and just pummeled his geezer's face. Just because that would have been for shock value, because Luke doesn't do that. He's normally the victim. But it is good that he does get the guy back, isn't it?
Massively.
I love it. Yeah.
And the fact that he smacks him around his already fucked up face with a yardstick is brilliant.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is so much satisfaction. Oh, and he gets called into the headmaster's office and they're going to expel him from school. And it's David who steps up about hate crimes for the school. And he even intimidates the head of the school.
What did the kid call him?
What?
You know, the kid, the one Luke hit in the face. What did he call Luke?
I don't think that's relevant to this conversation.
Did he call him a faggot?
I believe that's the word that was used, yes. But that's no excuse.
So that makes it a hate crime.
What?
A hate crime. And I'd like to know how many others have been perpetrated against her son under your watch. A gay student targeted with physical violence finally defends himself. And you're, what? Suspending him?
Again, doesn't shout, doesn't raise his voice or threaten him in any way. It's done really, really calculated, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's brilliant. It's really intelligent, really well done, because the principal just shits his pants about the fact that they're, right, we're going to sue you. And instantly he's just off the hook. But I thought and this is what I mean. This is the clever part of the film. The fact that, yes, he can kick anyone's ass, but he can manipulate anyone. And the fact that because of his cold stare and the way he portrays himself, everyone just goes, oh, fuck, all right, I don't want to, you know. I'm not going to mess with this, because he seems to sort of, you know, tick every box of how he's going to fuck you over, not just physically.
Yeah, he's very, very good. And it's so convenient, the next scene when Luke's outside the room, once David obviously helped him get out of being expelled, that he just pours his heart out to Anna looking at the plastic surgery. And that's when he talks about the people he killed. And for me, I don't get why Luke isn't frightened, knowing that this guy's killed so many people, and knowing that he's killed so many people, he's then setting up and divulging all this information. Like Kristen knows about it, Anna's told her. It doesn't really make sense. I know it's a convenient kind of driver for the plot for our next kind of final showdown, But Kells, it's just too convenient. And it's like, really?
I have mixed feelings about it, because for this lad, this is obviously the first person he's had in his life that actually stands up for him and that actually does stuff to look out for him. His parents don't bother. They're weak. They're useless. They pay no attention to him whatsoever. He's been clearly picked on for a long time by these guys at school and has no friends. So this guy's kind of come along and is his saviour and potentially filling that void of his older brother. So I get why he feels there is a loyalty to him. And I think he's naive to think that he's not actually going to hurt anyone that he loves. He knows he's a killer, but I think he's naive to the fact that he will just kill anyone. It doesn't really matter who they are, whether you like them or not. So I get why he does it, but I think he's just too young and immature to really realise the consequences of what he's doing.
Yeah, I think that's the only way you could possibly sell the reasons why. I mean, it does lead us into a very good scene where you get Lance Reddick and his goons, who are completely incompetent, when they go to the house and you've got Laura hanging out the washing with David, and they turn up and she obviously doesn't know what's going on. And bless her, no one would, because she's so convinced and been sucked into and groomed that this guy, David, knew her son, Callum, and that he's there to kind of share the love, that these guys turn up, highlight how dangerous he is, and then there's a massive firefight. And I never understand, when someone's in a house, why these soldiers shoot at waist height. You know someone's going to be laying on the floor. Why don't they ever shoot low? It's just so fucking tropey.
Yes, it is. It is. But it happens in every film, doesn't it? I can't mark this film down for that, because it, like you just said, it's every single film. They shoot just the middle of the house, because they're going to stand up, aren't they, and take several hundred rounds.
But... and they get taken out remarkably easily, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They do.
And it's good. I do like the guy, he gets shot in the foot, and when he falls on the floor, it's under the bed, he's like, oh, shit, when he's got a gun faced at his head. He just knows he's going to get taken out. But it's done easy, and I was really surprised when I first watched this, when Laura's there and she's like, what's going on? Why are these people after you? And because he destroys all evidence, and that's what he's been trained, as soon as people find out who you are, he'll take out everyone. And I was really surprised that he just got that knife and he just shoved it into Laura's chest and he killed her. It's just so cold-blooded.
Why are you surprised?
Because I thought, like, stupidly, when I first watched this, that he might have kind of, once he started apologising to her and said, you understand, he might kind of let her off or just, like, knock her out and just leave her there. I didn't think that he'd actually just fucking kill her in cold blood.
But he doesn't have feelings, does he? He doesn't have any kind of actual emotion. So he's got a job to do, and if you get in the way, you're fucked. Doesn't matter who you are or what you are. He doesn't have feelings. He's not connected to anything. It's just a program.
Yeah, I completely get that. When you look more into it, I was like talking about when I first watched this, not the critical eye, just for entertainment's sake, I thought, oh, she might live to tell the tale and spread the word, but yeah.
It was interesting because I thought he was going to let her live until she went to scream, he's in the kitchen, and he just stabbed her.
Mm.
So until she did that, I honestly thought he was going to just let her go, because she doesn't actually know anything. So no, she can't compromise him at any stage, can she?
It is tricky, isn't it? I didn't know. But it's the same with Spencer when he's escaping and he has a head-on collision with Spencer, the dad. He just walks up to him and he just shoots him in the chest. I mean, there's no fucking big loss. He was a crap character, to be honest, for his calibre of actor. And he just fucks off into the cornfield. He's just wiping out now. He's going through the motions of his training of wiping out all evidence of anyone who's ever come into contact with him.
And I laugh at that, though, because did you see when he crashed the car? And he noticed he wasn't dead. He sort of rolled his eyes, like, oh, for fuck's sake.
When you just die. Yeah. I love it when he goes to Kristen in the diner. And he just walks in and she starts to talk. And he can't be fucked to listen to whatever nonsense and lies is coming out of her mouth. So he just shoots her. And then as he's walking out, he chucks a few hand grenades. And I think they've got Glenn Medeiros playing a classic 80s song, Because I Love You. And it just blows up and kills everyone. And the music stops. I thought this was a really good fun scene.
Hey. Is Zen working?
She just left.
Well, yeah. Where was she going?
I'm not sure exactly.
To pick up Luke?
I think that she's going on...
Never mind.
It was weird, but I can see why you liked it.
It's great. And I did like the 80s music in there. Kels, did you like that? The scene with the diner of everyone just being, all the innocents being killed, basically.
I thought it was over the top, but yeah, I like the way they threw the grenades and the music. I thought they'd put the two together quite well. Yes, I thought it was quite entertaining. It added a bit of comedy to it.
Yeah, because it just wasn't necessary and it's just really violent. And it ends because Luke has got, obviously, detention. So he's helping with the Halloween prom, putting everything away. And that's where our showdown is, which is a really good place because you've got mirror mazes, you've got haunted houses, you've got everything set up. And you've got more cannon fodder in the teacher, who you knew at some point was just going to die, especially when Luke has his mobile taken away. That's it. And they all turn up. You've got Lance Reddick there. You've got the kids and you've got David. And you've got this Enter the Dragon mirror maze, which they run through. And this teacher's like, follow me. And he just runs off. And all you can hear is this knife going through flesh. And he just falls on the floor. And he just thought, I'm glad you're dead. Because it was just a case of when, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, he was just cannon fodder, wasn't he? You knew that he was going to die as soon as you saw him.
And when they're running out and Lance Reddick tries to kind of have a fight with him, it's almost as if he kind of puts the Stanley knife he's got up his wrist and cuts his arteries. Is that how he dies? I couldn't work out how he died.
I'm just trying to watch it again now because I didn't get it either. So he probably does, yeah.
It looks really strange. It's really quick. There's not a massive fight, which I was pleased because... If he was fighting, especially with the shit that we've seen in the bar, I mean, he would have kicked Lance Reddick's ass, Kel. It wouldn't have been a good fight to see.
It would have definitely been completely one-sided because the whole team have been completely inadequate right from day one. But I just, this whole scene in the school and the Halloween thing, it irritated me because it was so predictable.
Mm-hmm.
It was so annoying. Because even if you've set it up for Halloween, you've got in America they do Halloween way more than we do. So I get that potentially they would have gone to all this effort maybe in a school and had the maze and had whatever. One, you'd have to have a fire escape so there would be a quick fucking exit. And two, the fire escape wouldn't have a padlock on it. So you wouldn't have to go back through the maze or out through the other way. You would have a quicker exit. So it's really fucking irritating that they have to run through this maze or this escape route that's like a trapdoor or whatever it was, because that just wouldn't be. And it was just so predictable. I found it annoyed me too much to be able to enjoy it.
Yeah, I completely agree. It was very convenient and very tropey. And again, when he takes out Lance Reddick, he puts his gun down. Surely a soldier would never leave any weapons behind, but conveniently he does. And it's Anna who picks the gun up. And she does shoot him, and you've got the smoky floor where he's fallen onto, and you just know it's very much like Halloween. Yeah. And the director of this, Adam Wingard, is a huge Halloween fan and a huge John Carpenter fan, so there are kind of like nods to this. And you just knew he was coming back. Again, it's a case of why don't you just fucking shoot him again and again and again? Why do you always do it once?
Mm-hmm.
They call this a horror film. It's more of a thriller, but it's the trope of this. And when he's strangling Anna, you just knew. You were basically looking at your watches for a countdown of, right, Luke's going to turn up and stab him with that knife you gave him. That's right, isn't it?
Oh, God, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Like Kelly said in her little rant, it was... it's so fucking tropey. It's so predictable, the whole end of this film. Even the end of the film was predictable. wasn't it?
Yeah, that's predictable. Yeah, let's talk about that, because they're outside in the ambulance and Fire Brigade say, yes, we've rescued two bodies, which we know we've got Lance Reddick and we've got the teacher. They're the two bodies. So one is missing. And you've got that fireman who walks out limping and you know it's David. And it comes back to Anna, who says, like, what the fuck? And they share that stare. And then the film ends. And it's like, no way. He's been shot. He's been stabbed twice. It's just, why?
No, well, he's done the same thing, hasn't he? Because he's burnt the bodies and removed their teeth.
Yeah, that's what happened last time.
Yeah, which is how he escaped the last time and they thought he was dead. So he's basically trying to get out and not be and think that they're one of the ones that have died. And it's only when he then walks out, even though he's been stabbed in the back and shot in the shoulder and the leg.
I just wanted him to walk out. I didn't need that ending, did you?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. But yeah. I think they were hoping that they were going to be able to do another one.
Yeah, I can see that.
And they have talked about it as well, apparently.
Oh, so pleased they didn't. I mean, where do you go with films like this? They've been done so many times and you just can only reinvent the wheel. And it just gets fucking boring. But so it does end with he's alive and will there be another one? I mean, the fact that it was made in 2014, 10 years ago, would suggest that they're not going to do it. But you just don't know, do you? Ghostbusters went for like a hiatus of, what, fucking 10 years? Top Gun Maverick, 30-odd years. And then they made another one. So you just don't know. But they'll never obviously beat Top Gun Maverick, that kind of...
Well, no, obviously not, no.
No, but, the awards at that one.
But apparently Dan Stevens and the director of this have met and spoken about it because they both worked on Gorilla X.
Okay.
Which they're both involved in. So apparently they've sort of spoke about it again. Potentially he wants to reprise the role. So they're talking about... There has been word, let's put it that way. So...
I honestly, even though it would be free to watch, I don't think I'd ever go to the cinema to watch it. I'd wait till it came out on Netflix or Amazon.
Yeah, I wouldn't be rushing to go and see it, that's for damn sure.
It's crap. But, Kelly, again, you're going to come first. Give me your thoughts. Good. How would you rate The Guest?
I would give it a 2.5 out of 5, I would say.
Wow, I'm shocked.
Down the middle.
Yeah, because it's not good, but it's also not bad. The ending really frustrates me. Otherwise, I'd have given it a 3. Because it's easy watching. It needs more of a story because you need a bit more of the background to him and why and what exactly he is to do. But there are some good bits in it. I like when he beats them up. I like the violence to it. And I do like his psychotic side. So... yeah, I think it's worth a watch as long as you don't mind a little bit of predictableness at the end.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, do you know, I did not think you'd score it 2.5. You're usually pretty hardcore on the 2s for even a good film. So that really, really surprises me.
Well, there you go. I'm good to surprise you.
Well, he was in a towel at one point, so I'm sure that will give it. We never even mentioned the boobs. Yeah, but
he was in a towel. He was in a towel, so there wasn't a lot to see, was there?
No, but you saw a lot of body, and we didn't even talk about boobs, did we, Neil?
No, but she was let down by her pants.
What, having them on?
No, they were just too big.
Oh, all right. Okay, either
I was
or
like, oh, they're nice boobs then. Oh, she's in massive pants. No, that's gone. That's gone.
Apart from pants aside, how would you rate this, mate?
I would pull him aside, to be fair. She was quite nice. How would I rate this? I hated this film. I thought it was fucking trash. I'd give it a 1. It was fucking boring, predictable nonsense. If you want a revenge army psycho film with lots of killing, just watch any of the Rambo films. They're a billion times better than this. And they were made a long time ago. It was so fucking tropey. There was no background story. Nothing was explored. The family were a bunch of dicks. It was, honestly, I had to watch this twice just today because the first time I struggled to concentrate on it because it was so bad. But the only fun fact about this film, the soundtrack, it was actually released on my birthday.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, the synthwave soundtrack that was made for it was actually, on my birthday in 2014. So that was the only good thing probably about this film. I wouldn't recommend it to anyone. I think it's just a pile of poo. So,
I love that synth, that 80s synth, the way it's that soundtrack when they were in the club. It really reminded me of the first Terminator film.
Yes. Yes, it did. Initially, I thought the music was shit in this, but then I started listening to it again. And I thought, actually, it's not too bad. So, yeah, and it did. Yeah, I think you're right, Terminator. It had a resemblance, definitely.
But I would give this film a 2 out of 5. I enjoyed a lot of it, but I did have to look on the internet at interviews to kind of fill some of the gaps, just because I like to know all the information about a backstory, and it didn't give you a lot of information, this, and it was a bit fucking shallow, but it was all right. Some of the acting was terrible. It was very predictable, but it's an easy watch. It really, really is. So it deserves a kind 2. But I'd probably recommend it to other people, but with that caveat of it's not fucking great, but there's some good action in there. Make sure you stay around for the bar fight scene after that, just to kind of dip in and out. But no, I enjoyed it. So it's not too bad. And it's on Netflix in the UK if you've got nothing else to watch, or if you're a Magic Bridgerton fan and you want to see this guy doing something completely different, something completely out of the blue, which I doubt if you see a bar fight in Bridgerton where people get the shit kicked out of them, that Dan Stevens can do that. Do you think he would have been a good James Bond?
No.
Kel?
No.
I think he may have been pretty fucking good. He's a bit Daniel Craigy with the eyes, isn't he?
No.
His face is not right.
You're right. I don't think his face. I don't think he's a particularly good actor. So, hence why he's not really been in anything apart from voice acting.
Oh, has he not?
No, I looked because I thought I've never seen him before, and obviously this was made 10 years ago, so he's either been in a load of shit, or he's been off screen, and I was right.
Fair enough. There you go. But that is it tonight. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I really hope you've enjoyed this. And again, thanks for all of your streams and downloads. It's just unbelievable. So we really appreciate your support. We will be back next week. I've got no clue what we're going to be back with, but there is fucking loads on the queue that you can listen to. It's just getting bigger and bigger. So, and there's films that I've discovered that aren't on the queue of audio, like on Spotify and Amazon, wherever you're, iTunes, wherever you're listening to this, that are on YouTube, like The Purge, film reviews like that. So check out the YouTube channel. I haven't uploaded anything for a while, but it is still active, and I will put stuff on there. But there are reviews on there that you can't listen to on all the usual podcasting channels. But we'll be back next week. Thanks again for your support. You're all amazing, and just take care. All the movie clips and music used in this podcast are the intellectual property rights of the respective copyright holder and used to only enhance your listening experience, and any infringement caused is unintended. Well, that's it now, and we will see you next week.